Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
This is it, the official start of summer. Barbecues, road trips, white shoes. But of course, the day is really about much more. Have you thanked a military service member? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace.
Make it a working lunch. Listen to the Marketplace Midday Update podcast for the day's top business headlines. Subscribe on iTunes or at marketplace.org/podcast.
From the Frank Stanton Studios in Los Angeles, I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. This is your Marketplace podcast for Monday, the 28th day of May. The U.S. markets may be closed on this Memorial holiday, but in Europe, shares in one of Spain's largest banks took a beating. The losses came after news that a government bailout will cost about $19 billion more than expected. Meanwhile, it is not exactly clear how the Spanish government will pay for that bailout. The ongoing banking crisis there has pushed the cost of borrowing to a near-record high. Marketplace's Amy Scott has more now on what that means for the European economy and why it matters here.
This story will sound familiar. Spain had a long real estate boom that went spectacularly bust about 5 years ago. Peter Hahn teaches finance at the Cass Business School in London. He says now Spain's regional banks are sitting on billions of euros of bad debt.
This group of banks essentially lost money the old-fashioned way.
By lending it to homebuyers and developers who now can't pay. A few years ago, seven regional banks merged to create Bankia. As losses piled up, the Spanish government seized the bank earlier this month. And with more banks on the verge of collapse, Hahn says there's talk in Europe of a U.S.-style bank bailout.
If the European Union were to put up funds, which is largely Germany, could those funds be used to recapitalize weak banks around the southern part of the EU and break the cycle?
Spanish Prime Minister Mariano Rajoy dismissed the idea of an international bank rescue today. And analyst John Raymond with CreditSights doesn't expect much fallout here in the U.S. He says Bankia's troubles are specific to Spain.
Not many foreign banks or other investors will have exposure to Bankia. It's very much a domestic entity. And last year in its IPO, most of the shares went to domestic investors as well.
But Spain's troubles are fueling more talk of a breakup of the eurozone, which could disrupt global trade and hurt U.S. companies doing business in Europe. I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
As we mentioned, stock markets are closed today, as are banks, so we won't see the full impact from what Amy reported until tomorrow. So enjoy your Memorial Day barbecues and parades, and if you feel like taking a break from all those outdoor activities, just log on to your computer. It is a big shopping weekend, and stores are pushing for a little cyber retail therapy. Gigi Duban reports from Birmingham, Alabama, on the newest online deal spectacular.
It wouldn't be Memorial Day weekend without a couple bags of sand and a big bottle of weed killer. That's what one customer ordered here at this Lowe's in Birmingham. The thing about this is that the customer ordered all of it online to pick up in the store.
I'll get that if you'll get to play Sam.
All right. Manager Shane Ratley is pulling the items off the shelves for the customer to pick up. Retailers like Lowe's hope online discounts will beef up in-store sales this holiday weekend. So they're offering promotions like the 20-minute guarantee.
You buy it online, you come in, it'll be ready for you to pick up in 20 minutes. So that just speeds up their process.
Andy says Lowe's will price match its own online prices, which tend to be lower. Other stores this weekend are offering free shipping and deals on patio furniture and bikinis. Retail analyst Howard Davidowitz says, so what if you're shopping online when the weather's nice? If it means a better deal, people don't care about an extra hour in front of a screen.
This is where it's happening. So people are sitting by their computers. They like the ability to compare prices to make sure they have the best deal and they're more confident of delivery.
Feeling guilty about not spending time outside? Walmart's website has a, quote, take a break from the backyard section. Among the items featured there, things to help you buy more stuff online, laptops and tablets. In Birmingham, I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
The official arrival of summer also marks a schedule shift at many companies. It's known as summer hours or summer Fridays, basically an abbreviated work week where employees may clock only a half day on Fridays or even get the whole day off. More and more companies offer this perk, and Marketplace's Jeff Tyler is here to explain why.
A recent survey found that about 30% of the top public companies in the U.S. plan to offer some version of summer Fridays.
That's actually a doubling in terms of the number of companies compared to last summer that are offering a similar type of benefit for their employees.
Brian Kropp is with the Corporate Executive Board, a business consultancy that conducted the survey.
Companies are looking for low-cost or ideally no-cost ways to provide benefits and rewards for their employees to try to keep them engaged within their workforces.
For the most part, that strategy seems to work. Bonnie Creason is an art director for a utility company in Minneapolis. She logs 9 hours a day for 9 days and gets every other Friday off.
I absolutely love it.
The schedule allows her to take long weekends without using vacation time. On those Fridays when she is in the office, she says it's quiet, so she tends to get more done. Not to mention the impact on company meetings.
One nice thing that's come out of it is that we no longer have Friday meetings. You know, let's be honest, who wants to go to a meeting on Friday?
At some companies, the schedule isn't just a summer thing. It runs year-round. Molly Jackson is a mechanical engineer for a company that builds circuit boards for satellites. She appreciates having every other Friday off, but
it does make for long hours. And so year-round, nine-hour days, it does take a little bit out of you. If it were just a summer program, I think I would like it a lot more.
Some companies offer these schedules as a benefit in lieu of more money. Jackson says she doesn't like the perk that much.
I don't know if that would be much of a consolation for not having a raise.
Still, in and of themselves, these schedules can improve morale. And that can be significant for companies trying to retain employees nearing retirement. Again, Bonnie Creason.
For them to offer this kind of benefit to employees, it makes them want to stay longer.
The condensed work week can also serve as a recruiting tool. Research shows that these perks make companies more attractive to job seekers. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
As we mentioned, Wall Street took the day off for hamburgers and hot dogs, but we will have the details from the rest of the globe when we do the numbers. Everyone loves money, right? Or at least enjoys having a little bit of it. Well, not so with the humble penny. Canada recently banned its one-cent currency, and the penny debate has been raging in this country for a while. And one stateside store has taken matters into its own hands. The Miami Herald's Doug Hanks wrote about Shell Lumbar, a hardware store in Florida that decided a penny saved is a penny, well, it's not really worth the effort. Doug joins us now. Welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me.
So you found this one hardware store in the Miami area that has actually banned the penny. Tell us why.
Well, they decided it just really wasn't worth the trouble counting pennies anymore. The spending power is so low that this hardware store said, you know, we're counting like 1,000 pennies a day by the time it's all over. And what do we get out of it? They said, let's just stop it. And they put up big signs with pennies, big red slash marks through it, and said to the customers, no more pennies. We're going to round in your favor. So if the change says that you should get 3 pennies back, they just give you the nickel and they eat the 2 cent loss.
Yeah, because I guess, I mean, you could certainly change your prices, but then you always have sales tax, right?
Right. And that's the thing. They tried to work it out and the accountants weren't happy about it, but they really got sick of bookkeepers saying, hey, you know, your drawer's off by 3 cents. And their answer basically was, why do we care?
Right.
And, you know, they're not the only ones in researching the story. For instance, overseas military bases, they stopped using the pennies like in the 80s.
Well, so what happens if, say, a customer comes in and wants to pay with 5 pennies instead of a nickel? They'll take the pennies, right? It's currency.
There are a few things that you could actually use to pennies to pay for. Like there's a little washer that sells for 3 cents. But basically, when someone tries to make out the exact change, they just say, keep your pennies, keep your pennies. We don't need it. Now, I think you could really screw them up by bringing in 100 pennies. Maybe they'd have to take it. But so far, it looks like it's fairly popular. Some people thought they were getting ripped off, but once they're told, no, we're saving you money, they're very happy about it.
Well, so Shell Lumber has been doing this for, I think, about a month now. How has it been for them?
It's been popular. This is a store that likes to have the brand of the old-fashioned neighborhood hardware store. They give away snow cones on Saturdays. They have a popcorn machine. So they saw this as just another way to make it easier to shop at Shell Lumber than, say, Home Depot, which is like their big crosstown rival. So they say it's been well-received, and it's just one more interesting thing they do.
What about, the gumball machine? What happens there?
Yeah, gumball machines have stopped taking pennies. It's really hard to find anything that's still taking pennies. Toll booths don't take them. The vending machines, the vending machine industry, they want dollar coins to catch on, but they're done with pennies. So it has very little use. Even the Federal Reserve, they used to, when the banks would deposit pennies, they would weigh them to make sure the deposit was right. They stopped doing that about 10 years ago. Now they essentially say, we trust you. It's not worth counting all these pennies.
You know, I know that there's a big movement in this country to get rid of the penny, so presumably this is cause celeb for them.
It is. when Barack Obama was running for president, he actually sort of offhandedly endorsed getting rid of the penny as long as, this is the senator from Illinois at the time, they could find another coin for Abraham
Lincoln. For Abraham Lincoln,
yeah.
Right.
That's the big stumbling block, Abraham Lincoln.
All right. Well, Doug Hanks, reporter for the Miami Herald, I would thank you for giving us, a penny's worth of your thoughts, but I'll round it up to a nickel.
Thank you very much.
Egypt confirmed today that it will have a runoff to elect its president in June. Last week's elections didn't produce a candidate with more than 50% of the vote. Libya was also scheduled to have its first election since the revolution there. Today, the head of the National Transition Council said the vote would be delayed and no date has been set. But the news could further spook investors. The country's economy remains shaky because of continuing political violence, and investors are reluctant to make new commitments without political stability. Reese Ehrlich reports from Tripoli and Benghazi.
A grocer puts money into a cash drawer at this hole-in-the-wall market in central Tripoli. Ahmed Ali says business was disastrous for Libyans last year during the anti-Gaddafi uprising.
During the fighting, there was practically no business at all. We opened only a few hours a day. There were a lot of shortages, so prices skyrocketed. It's 100% better now because people have money to spend.
There are signs of economic recovery. Oil production has nearly returned to pre-war levels. But the political instability here can't be underestimated. More than 60 armed militias exercise significant political power. Some have degenerated into criminal gangs. In Libya's second city, Benghazi, several hundred demonstrators gather to demand that the militias be broken up. Protester Nur Nadia Mohammed says the government needs to act urgently.
We want the government to collect the weapons and eliminate the militias. The government should provide security through the police and army.
The government in Tripoli needs no reminder that militias are a serious problem. Earlier this month, angry militiamen fought a two-hour gun battle outside the prime minister's office, demanding bonus payments for the time they spent fighting Gaddafi. Economy Minister Ahmed Al-Khoshli says those fighters don't represent the feelings of most of the people who took up arms against the old dictator.
They had legitimate demands, but it was not the right way to do it. People who made the revolution didn't do it to earn a bonus. Most refused the bonus. They returned to their jobs. For the rest of them, there is a mechanism to study who deserves to get the payment.
Al-Khoshli admits the ongoing violence is a problem for both foreign and local investors. So is the uncertain political situation. He says the transitional government is trying its best.
We want to privatize some of Gaddafi's state-owned companies, but it will take time. We are establishing laws and stabilizing things for the next government to take action.
But demonstrators here in Benghazi are growing increasingly impatient. But protester Abdul Wahab expects no quick fix.
So this chaos and this disorganization will have to carry on for some years before we establish a firm nation, nation with laws, a constitution that everybody adheres to it. But I'm relying on the factor of time.
But if it takes too much time, Libya's image with foreign investors may be damaged for years to come. In Benghazi, Libya, Omri Serlik for Marketplace.
Coming up, supply, demand, and the war on marijuana.
If you lock up a seller and create a shortage of pot, the price goes up, right? Well, when the price goes up, that inspires more growers and dealers to enter the trade because the profits are even higher.
But first, let's do the numbers. As we mentioned, Wall Street was quiet today, but in Europe, the markets hung steady on the face of more news about bank bailouts and political uncertainty. Britain's FTSE edged up 0.1%, France's CAC 40 shaved off 1.5%, and Germany's DAX lost 0.25%. And you are listening to Marketplace.
Get Marketplace's top headlines, podcasts, and special features delivered right to your inbox each day. Subscribe to the Midday Update newsletter at marketplace.org.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Tuesday. The Case-Shiller Home Price Index looks at how housing prices fared around the country in March. The Conference Board reports its findings on how consumers felt about the economy in May. And in Washington, President Obama awards the Medal of Freedom. This year's recipients include former Secretary of State Madeleine Albright, author Toni Morrison, and the one and only Bob Dylan. I'm Gina Delvac.
This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Tess Vigeland in for Kai Rizdahl. Primary season is almost over. Really? I swear. Texas holds its primary tomorrow. It was supposed to take place in March. And if it had, the Lone Star State might have had more influence on the race for the Republican presidential nominee. But the primary was delayed after several advocacy groups argued early electoral maps marginalized Latinos. Marketplace's David Gurrow reports.
In a couple of decades, the majority of Texas will be Latino. Today, Latinos make up 38% of the state's population. Tacho Mindiola runs the Center for Mexican-American Studies at the University of Houston.
Culturally, economically, I think we're a big influence in the state. We lag politically.
The state of Texas is solidly Republican. A Democrat hasn't won statewide office since 1994, and Republicans have controlled the Texas House and the Texas State Senate for a decade now. Lydia Camarillo is with the Southwest Voter Registration Education Project.
Since it's a red state, few dollars are invested by any groups to turn out any type of groups, much less Latinos.
Republicans aren't worried about losing Texas, and Democrats don't think they have much of a shot at winning it. But Camarillo says that if Texas Latinos were to vote in big numbers, they could put the state in play nationally.
We believe that Texas is an important state. It's 36 electoral votes.
Second only to California. That'd be good news for Democrats. Latinos tend to vote for them by a 2-to-1 margin. Groups like Camarillo's run voter registration drives. But Tacho Mindiola at the University of Houston says it's not that easy.
The second step is then you have to get them to the polls.
And so far, turnout has been a challenge. James Henson directs the Texas Politics Project. He says Latinos do have the potential to be a powerful voting bloc in Texas, but Democrats can't take them for granted. Latinos might leave the Democratic Party as demographics continue to change.
You know, middle class and upper class Latinos begin to peel off in some ways to the Republican Party.
And that could ensure Texas stays a red state for years to come. I'm David Gura for Marketplace.
It's been called a gateway drug, but in some states it's illegal medicine, one you can buy and sell, provided you have a license. But whatever you call it or however you want to use it, commentator Todd Buchholz says the war on marijuana is costing lots and lots of taxpayer money to go up in smoke.
I consider myself tough on crime, but every time I wait in a slow, snaking line at the airport, I wonder why we're wasting so many public dollars chasing down marijuana users. Now, I've never touched the stuff, but at a time of exploding budget deficits, keeping pot illegal costs taxpayers a ridiculous amount of money. Nearly half of all U.S. drug arrests are for marijuana. Don't we have better ways of deploying our police than sending them after people toking on some dried-out vegetable? By chasing after users and sellers, we actually incite more crime. If you lock up a cellar and create a shortage of pot, the price goes up, right? Well, when the price goes up, that inspires more growers and dealers to enter the trade because the profits are even higher. This is not Adam Smith on drugs. This is Adam Smith stone cold sober. Here's another way to look at it. Coffee is addictive, right? But you don't see murderous trafficking in it. If we ban coffee, you'd find 100 million Americans trying to corner Howard Schultz in an alley outside a boarded-up Starbucks. Hey, score me a mochaccino. Leave the gun. Take the latte. A Harvard study showed that the U.S. would save nearly $8 billion by decriminalizing marijuana. Then there's every bureaucrat's favorite word, revenue. States could raise up to $6 billion by taxing the stuff. A friend assured me 3/4 of those receipts would come from the extra sales of Doritos alone. Now, I'm not suggesting that smoking marijuana is a good thing. It's not. It damages your lungs, toys with your chromosomes, and might make you dopier. But let's face it, nearly 10 million people watch Jersey Shore. There are plenty of ways to keep dopey people busy without providing them with overnight lodging on your dime at your local jail.
Commentator Todd Buchholz was an economic advisor to the first President Bush. He's most recently the author of Rush, Why You Need and Love the Rat Race. Tell us what you think at marketplace.org. It is summer vacation time, and so that means maybe an adventure or two in the next couple of months. Or to quote author Joel Stein, a quest. Stein went on a quest recently, a quest for his manliness. His man journey, as he dubbed it, saw him enroll in a 3-day Marine boot camp, work as an LA firefighter for a day, and even get in the ring with the UFC Hall of Famer. Stein documents those adventures in his new book, Man Made, A Stupid Quest for Masculinity. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm really excited about this.
Talk to me about manliness and money. Do manly men handle money differently?
I mostly dealt with this very ancient Scotch-Irish Southern version of masculinity. You know, the hunting, fighting, camping. But I did one chapter where I did the blue state version of masculinity, which is I got a day trader to give me $100,000 of his money and let me trade it for the day, which was amazing. Yeah, day trading is not what I thought it would be at all. I thought you did what you and I would do if buying a stock, like find out what the company does, see who their CEO is, and maybe look at their P&E. No. They just, they only hold these stocks for a few seconds. So they are just, it's like poker. They're just looking at the psychology of the other people buying it and trying to guess whether it's going to go up or down in those few seconds. I don't recommend day trading.
Although but did it make you more manly?
It did make me more manly.
How so?
It's all about risk-taking. You have to have a lot of manliness is about confidence.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of risk-taking because you're gambling, well, in my case, someone else's money, but he was sitting right next to me. So that's still a lot of pressure.
But back to the question of whether manly men handle money differently. Any of these experiences change what you're doing?
Well, the problem with manly men is they should not be allowed to touch money.
Really?
Oh, yes. Yeah, they should immediately hand all their money over to any woman in their life, for sure.
Well, what does that tell us about Wall Street, then?
Oh, Wall Street's a mess. You don't want your money involved in Wall Street.
Because they're all manly men?
You know, if you can distance yourself from the manly men and let them duke it out and just get the gains from their fighting, like with an index fund,
mm-hmm.
then you're way ahead because you're just exploiting their fight. But you don't want to get involved in their fight. Yeah. All downside. Yeah,
I don't know. I've been to Wall Street, and I don't find them terribly manly.
Well, they're manly in a certain kind of way, right? They're not manly in a construction worker kind of way.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ugly side of masculinity. The problem with manliness is there's two versions, right? There's the construction and the destruction. So the most manly movie in the world is A Bridge on the River Kwai. The only manlier movie than The Bridge on the River Kwai would be Two Bridges on the River Kwai, because you get to destroy two bridges and then rebuild two bridges. I watch my son do it with Legos all day long.
Build and destroy.
Yeah. At first, it was the just destroy. He'd make me build things, and then he'd destroy them. I felt like I was teaching him how to be a terrorist. But now he's into the building and then destroying. So it's a big step up in manliness.
Well, speaking of your son, the entire book really does boil down to, I think, a message for him, right? You know, you deal with competition, male bonding, surviving the outdoors. So how about we create another chapter? And what message do you want him to take away about money?
I'm very conservative with my money. It's what my dad taught me. My dad's a really good investor, and he spent a lot of time boring the crap out of me with how to invest. But it's sunk in. Like, I know how to do it now, and I meet people who don't, and it's shocking, right? I can't believe Money Magazine comes out every month. It's like you can tell people once, and they get it. But people don't. And so, you know, it's really a way of thinking and living. I want to teach my son that. But I'm going to teach him to be a little more aggressive than I am. Hmm. That's what I learned from the day trader, that if you understand risk, you can incorporate it into your life a little better.
Hmm.
Although I don't own any bonds right now, and I'm 40. So that's kind of pushing.
It's risky, but you would encourage your son to do this.
I would encourage my son to go bondless.
Bondless?
Bondless, yeah, and just risk it all. I think that's a manlier way to invest.
Joel Stein, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having me.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
And this final note is the era of the oh-so-intimate airport pat-down finally coming to an end? Perhaps in the future, maybe a distant future. The Department of Homeland Security has asked technology companies to come up with a handheld scanner that can replace the personal pat-down. It's got to weigh less than 5 pounds and tell the difference between a pacemaker and an explosive device and do its work within 15 seconds. Could someone please, please design this? Signed, All People. And that is Marketplace from American Public Media. The U.S. markets were closed today in observance of Memorial Day. Our producers include Gina Delvac, Millie Jefferson, and Fiona Ng. Tune in tomorrow to the Marketplace Morning Report for the latest in business and economic news. I'm Tess Vigeland. Hope you can join us again tomorrow. This is APM.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.